Welcome to the Gay Buddhist Forum, where teachers from all schools of Buddhism offer their perspectives on the Dharma and its application in modern times, especially for LGBTQI audiences. These talks are offered freely to the world and made possible by appreciative listeners. If you would like to support our efforts to share the Dharma with underserved audiences, please visit gaybuddhist.org. There you can donate, find a list of upcoming speakers, or enjoy many hundreds of these recorded talks dating back to 1996.
All right, welcome back, everyone. We have quite a few join us after the beginning, so if there's anyone new that would like to say hello, just online, you can, I'll let you unmute and say hello if you like. Okay, well, welcome everyone. It's our tradition to go around the room and say our names, and then we'll recognize folks online, and then I'll introduce our teacher for today, and here we'll hear our Dharma talk. So, my name is Grisha.
Jordan.
My name is Henry.
I'm Greg.
Alex.
Luis.
Marcus.
Brennan.
Jim.
Jerry.
Evan.
Matthew.
Bob.
Susan.
My name is Cass.
Mike.
George.
Don.
Ray.
Okay, and then online we've got Jeff and Dave, Bob, Liz, Tom, Richard, John, another Richard, Brian, Andres, Tom, Rich, someone on the telephone. If you'd like us to change your name or say your name, you can unmute. And who's that? Ori DC? Hi. Okay.
Michael.
Oh, Michael. Okay. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you.
Okay. And then I'll introduce our teacher for today. Dhanadasa has been practicing with the San Francisco Buddhist Center community since 1993 and was ordained in 2011. His current area of exploration is in the cultivation of metta, universal loving kindness, as a response to all hatred, discrimination, and bigotry in the world out there. Through personal anecdotes and experiential exercises, Dhanadasa will explore our relationship to ourselves and others with a particular emphasis on our deeply ingrained tendency to see others as different from us.
All right. Well, welcome, everyone. Again, my name is Dhanadasa, and it was interesting hearing you, Grisha, read that little blurb about me, because I wrote that 5-6 years ago. It's been quite some time. So perhaps I'll just refresh that blurb in terms of the shape of my practice. And actually, the pandemic has had quite a dramatic effect on my practice, particularly around deepening. So right before the pandemic happened, I retired. I think some of you know that. I retired on January 17th, 2020. And then I spent the very first week of February of 2020 on a three-week trip in India. And it was to go on Buddhist pilgrimage. And it was my very first trip to India. And it was absolutely life-changing. There was something that just touched my heart very deeply to actually witness these very sacred Buddhist places. Bodh Gaya, which is where the Buddha was enlightened. Sarnath, which is where the Buddha taught his very first sermon, his very first teaching. It's the place where the turning of the wheel began, the Dharma wheel. And we also visited Kushinagar, which is where the Buddha passed away. And I remember one of the experiences I had, which was so powerful, was at a temple at Sarnath. We witnessed a Buddhist service, if you will, and essentially it was a Theravada monk, a Thai forest-dwelling monk, and he was chanting. And in the Theravada tradition, chanting is still a very central practice And the way Thai monks, they chant, they actually sing. And I just found it so incredibly beautiful. And then when I got back to San Francisco, about 3 weeks later, the global lockdown happened. And I just basically found myself diving into the Pali Canon. It was something I wanted to, that got awakened in me as a result of this trip to India. So I started studying the Pali Canon, and the thought arose in my mind of, maybe I'll teach myself Pali, which is the language that the Pali Canon is, the Buddhist teachings are written down in. And in the past, when I was working, when this thought would rise in my mind, the next thought right after that would always be, well, who's got time for that? So that thought arose, and then the thought right after that arose, wait a second, I've got time for that. So I then also began teaching myself Pali, learning Pali. And that process continues today, kind of on and off. And at first I started with a textbook, and now I'm just learning Pali by osmosis, just by continuing to study the Pali Canon. So in my mind, in my imagination, the Pali Canon is very much alive in my imagination. And I've got this ongoing relationship that continues to unfold in relationship to the Buddha. So that's kind of the current shape of my practice, if you will. So what I'd like to talk to, speak about today is this topic of faith. So the Pali word that's being translated for faith is sadha. And you may have also heard this in Sanskrit as well as shraddha. So shraddha in Sanskrit, sadha in Pali. And this word is very commonly translated as faith. There are also some other translations of trust, confidence, and whatnot. So, faith, this word faith. In terms of translations, there is this notion of things getting lost in translation, meaning getting lost in translation. So, as an example, if I were to begin speaking about faith, well, this is a word that I imagine most people have heard before, and not only that, that most people have meaning associated with that word. So when I use the word faith, whatever you may think of, the meaning you have associated with that word will come to the fore of your mind, and you may think to yourself, yes, I know what faith is. It's this, this, and this. However, the meaning that you may associate with this word faith may or may not correspond to the word being translated. It may or may not correspond to this word sadha. So, for example, this is quite common, faith. I know lots of people who associate blind faith. Oh, I know what faith is. That's blind faith. And sadha is most definitely not blind faith. The Buddha is quite clear about this. But I'll go into that a bit more. So how do we get to the actual meaning that the Buddha was pointing at with this word sadha? Well, we could certainly look this word up in the Pali English Dictionary. We could certainly find other Buddhist writers or other scholars who've written and read commentaries about this word. But what we're going to do is this afternoon is we're actually going to go back to the original text, and we're going to explore some of the teachings around faith that the Buddha gave. And from the context, we can actually suss out the actual meaning that the Buddha was pointing at with this word. And we can begin to develop an understanding of what this word sadha is pointing at. So that's what we're going to do. But first, we're going to do something experiential around this notion of faith. And we're just going to start with the Four Noble Truths. So the first noble truth is the truth of suffering. And instead of using suffering, I'll just speak about stress and anxiety. Because this word suffering, suffering, what's that? Unsatisfactoriness, what's that? I prefer to find words that speak to my heart and speak to the hearts of others. So when I use the language of stress and anxiety, I don't think there's anyone who would say, I have no idea what you're talking about. So the first noble truth is there is stress and anxiety. That's just part of the human experience. The second noble truth speaks about, the cause of suffering or the cause of stress and anxiety. And that cause, from a Buddhist perspective, is greed, hatred, and delusion. The third noble truth is that there is an escape from greed, hatred, and delusion. And the fourth noble truth describes the path leading to the escape of greed, hatred, and delusion. Okay, so that's a very brief description of the Four Noble Truths. Okay. So, here's the question, and this is also the enlightenment test. So, if you've ever wondered whether or not you're enlightened, you can find out right now with this one simple question. Okay? So I'm going to share this question with you twice, and we'll just have an opportunity to just sit with this question for a few moments and just notice what arises. So here's the enlightenment test. Am I enlightened? So you can ask yourself this question. Do I experience myself as being completely free of stress and anxiety at all times and under all conditions? Just let that question sink in. And I'm going to repeat it again. Do I experience myself as being completely free of stress and anxiety at all times and under all conditions? So I was wondering if anyone in the room would like to just share, just off the top of your head, what arose for you when you dropped that question into your mind?
Are you kidding? I was fascinated by the question because of all anxieties, and that really refers to how my body reacts in some ways, and then my mind sort of assesses positioning. There's so much of identification to the body wanting to be in a pattern I know, as opposed to always being open to the stimulus and things coming towards me, as opposed to setting up walls. So in some ways, I'm not enlightened other than I have sort of a path that I can approach in how my body and my mind reacts.
Thank you. Any other thoughts? Yeah?
My initial reaction was no. But after that, I remembered that there are moments that I do remember to practice and do feel less stressed and less. One example, recently, a couple weeks ago, I was in the hospital in emergency for 7 hours, mostly waiting to be seen or having test results discussed with me, things like that. And I had no control over those circumstances, and I just focused on my breath and let it all go. And I did have moments of peace there.
So. Mm-hmm.
I've had moments that have kind of emerged more recently where I'll be just stuck in traffic and I'll go, oh, this is how it is. And so, those are nice moments.
I was reading recently about some monks from the period of the Vietnam War when they wanted to bring attention to the suffering of their people and set themselves on fire, sat in the flames without reacting. And so I can't even fathom having that relationship to suffering.
I was thinking about the word free of anxiety and suffering. It could mean that suffering and anxiety is still happening, but I am free from it, though it is happening. Instead of meaning that there is no experience of anxiety and suffering at all, and it seems to be more true. Way of relating, because again my immediate reaction is to avoid suffering. Again, that's one of those delusions of hate, trying to avoid as opposed to accept it as part of existence in human body, which is inevitable. And the question is whether to not whether to have anxiety or not, but to be free from it or not.
You know, I come to have moments when, after years and years, I feel very open. My body is open, my mind is open. I feel sort of like connected to that oneness of all things, and it feels very great. And then something gets triggered, and there'll be an anxiety thing. And I'm thinking, I know that other place, but that other place seems, I just, you know, it's very hard to like step out of it once it gets triggered.
Okay, I'll just take one more.
Yeah, I was, when I was thinking about the question, what came up is of course not, but then I thought, sometimes I'm aware of it and I can sort of be kind to myself. It's sort of like the second arrow, you know, instead of just, but that's very subtle. Most of the time I just get into it until I realize or calm down.
Okay, fantastic. So I'm going to ask a second question, and then I'll invite some responses. And for this second question, I'd like to invite some responses from the Zoom world as well. Okay, so here's the second question. It's very close to the first question, slightly different. Is it possible for me, this is you asking yourselves, is it possible for me to be completely free of stress and anxiety at all times and under all conditions? Okay, I'll repeat that question one more time. Just really let this question sink in and just notice what it does, how you respond to it. Is it possible for me to be completely free of stress and anxiety at all times and under all conditions? Yeah, so I was wondering if anyone on Zoom would like to share anything that, what arose for you?
Go ahead, Tom.
Yes, thank you. That's a very provocative question. And what came up immediately for me is the answer to that question is the question. And I can't know the future, whether that will be a possibility. But the question seems to be the awareness of the question seems to be the challenge. I've noticed in the dentist chair sometimes it becomes acute that the awareness that suffering is about to happen and that I consciously relax and breathe through it. And consequently, my dentist and I became pretty good friends. Because I know how suicidal that calling can be at times. I've heard.
Thank you. Anyone else on Zoom?
Tom Brewer.
Yes. Hi, Dhanadasa. Great questions. And on the second one, it occurs to me that although I don't experience that now and have not at all times, it is possible. And I think that that is really the nature of the third noble truth. And so for me, it's a matter of faith in believing that that can be possible, which sort of ties back to what you started off talking about.
Liz has a question. It is not possible as humans to be free of all these things. However, as Buddhists, we can study to detach from these things and how we react. In the chat.
Okay, if there's one more, I think we can have time for that. Is there any other shares on Zoom?
I don't see any hands. You could just unmute. There you go, John E. Go ahead.
Let's see. My first thought was, who is asking the question? And in some ways, that was my answer, is if I can be with that self that's asking the question, yes. You know, if that makes sense.
It does. Okay, so, sadha, or faith. I actually think faith is it's a poor translation in this culture. It's actually quite a confusing translation, I think. So the sutta that I'd like to explore with you, actually, this word sutta, it's a Pali word, and the literal translation is thread, sutta, thread. So each one of the teachings in the Pali Canon is referred to as a sutta. So it's a single teaching of the Pali Canon, or a single thread of a teaching. So the sutta I'd like to explore is a sutta called the Chunky Sutta in relationship to faith.
Chunky?
Yeah, chunky, as in, yeah, like chunky peanut butter or something like that. Yeah. And I'm not going to go into the entire sutta. I'm actually going to start just in the middle of it, just pick out the relevant bit. So in this sutta, there are a group of Brahmins who come to visit the Buddha. They want to ask him some questions. And the question that is put forth to the Buddha is, how does one discover the truth? How does one discover the truth? And the Buddha's response to this question, it really sheds a tremendous amount of light upon what the Buddha is pointing at by this word sadha, or faith. How does one discover the truth? So whenever one is looking at the Pali Canon, one has to keep in mind that these are stories from 2,600 years ago, from ancient India. So there is some sort of translation that needs to happen, more than just from Pali to English, but actually translating from 2,600 years ago in India to our modern society today, and actually very specifically cultural to this society, because this is a society that we're practicing in, our modern day society. So 2,600 years ago, Buddhism was purely an oral tradition. So if you wanted to learn about Buddhism, you had to go find a teacher and you had to listen to their teaching, and then you had to reflect on it and practice it and whatnot. So knowing this, we can keep this in mind in terms of the Buddha's response. So a Brahmin asked the Buddha this question: how does one discover the truth? And this is what the Buddha said. He says, well, first you have to find a teacher. And when you find a teacher, the very first thing that one should do is to just observe their behavior and ask yourself the question, do I see any greed in this person? Do I see any aversion or hatred in this person? Do I see any delusion in this person? And the Buddha advised to really observe these teachers very closely and choose wisely. And then the Buddha said, if you do not see any indications of greed, hatred, and delusion in this person, then you should place your faith upon this person. It's the very first thing the Buddha says. And then the Buddha says this: once you place your faith in this person, then you should approach this person. Once you approach this person, then you should draw close to them. Once you draw close to them, then you should listen carefully to what this person is teaching. After listening closely, then you should remember what this person has spoken. Because again, it's an oral tradition. Therefore, one must remember the teachings. And after remembering, one must then investigate the teachings. And then this goes on until one then arrives at the truth. So the reason I'm bringing this to the fore is because in this description of how one discovers the truth, faith is at the very beginning, or sadha is at the very beginning. And this is before you've even really listened closely to what this person has to teach. So in this context, a very good translation, I think, within this context is, it's provisional trust, I think, is a very, very good translation. Okay, so here's a modern day example of what this word sadha is pointing at. Let's say you walk up the street to Dog-Eared Books, 20th and Valencia, and you decide, hey, I'm going to buy a Buddhist book. I don't know what, I'll just go see what I see. So you go over to Dog-Eared Books, you look at the Buddhist book section, and maybe there's two books that catch your eye, maybe three books. You pull them out, you kind of flip through them. Maybe you look at the table of contents. Maybe you read the blurb about the author. Maybe you flip to a random page and read a paragraph or two. And then, oh, I'm going to take this book home. I'm going to buy this book, put these other two books away. Well, there's obviously a reason why you pick that book. And that reason has everything to do with sadha. Is there's something about this book that you liked, and you have decided to place provisional trust in this writer. You've decided to commit your money to buying this book, and you've decided to commit actually to read this book and give it some thought. But it's provisional trust. This is an act of sadha. So here's another example. Let's say, if you recall in your past, the very first time you ever attended a introduction to meditation class, the very first time somebody taught you how to meditate. And let's say this teacher told you that, well, if you engage in meditation practice, then states of joy will arise. And given that you've never meditated before, you don't know whether or not that's actually true or not. You have not experienced that for yourself. And you might think, well, I kind of like this place. I kind of like this teacher. And you know what? I'm going to just give it a go. I'm going to see what happens. Again, that's sadha. One places provisional trust in the voice of another. This word provisional is very, very important. I will trust what you're saying. It's trust and verify. That's what this is, this word provisional. It's trust and verify. So the Buddha, in the Pali Canon, he spoke about two different kinds of sadha, or faith. He spoke about wise faith. He also spoke about baseless faith. And baseless faith would correspond to what we today would call blind faith. But wise faith is actually provisional trust. We have reasons why we might extend trust to someone, but we do that wisely. We don't believe what they say, face value. We accept that it's what they're saying. You like the way it sounds, and I'm going to give this a go. That's what sadha is pointing at. It's provisional trust. So now faith, over time, faith actually strengthens. Trust strengthens. Trust grows. Okay, so let's say, in the case of the meditation class example, let's say you were to go home and you were to start meditating. I'm going to meditate 15 minutes a day for 30 days and I'm just going to see what happens. So you go off and do that. And let's say after 30 days, you notice that states of joy are arising in your experience. And you might think to yourself, that person, they were right. I meditated and now states of joy are arising. So you go back to this teacher and you tell them that. And this teacher says to you, well, that's great. Well, if you continue to meditate, if you deepen your practice, deeper and deeper states of joy will continue to arise. And they might describe some of these deeper states of joy. Doctrinally, those correspond to the higher dhyanas, just deeper states of settling, peace, equanimity, joy. And then this teacher recommends, to go on retreat, for example, to get a deeper taste of meditation. So you think to yourself, well, this person was right about that thing about the deeper states of joy. Maybe I should try this out. I'll go on a meditation retreat. I'll see what happens. So you go do that. And sure enough, you notice that deeper states of joy do arise within your own experience. So imagine this happening over and over and over again. You would then arrive at the conclusion. You would have a sense of, I trust this person. They have given me various instructions over the years, and everything that they have said has proven to be accurate, or at least trustworthy. So one's trust in another person can strengthen. Now, there's also this notion of internal and external as well. So internal, external, for those of you who are familiar with the Satipatthana Sutta, or the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, this is a very clear instruction that the Buddha gives in the Satipatthana Sutta over and over again, to be mindful both externally and internally. So this corresponds to faith as well. So I've been speaking about having faith or provisional trust in another person's voice. And in that dynamic, this other person is describing to you an experience that you have not had. So you do not know whether or not what they're saying is true based upon your own direct experience. That's why trust is required, because you don't know. But then after you go off and meditate, perhaps go off on a meditation retreat, and you notice that deeper states of joy arise, one no longer needs faith to know this. You don't need to trust that this happens. You actually know this directly for yourself, that when you engage in, when you immerse yourself in deeper periods of meditation, that deeper states of joy arise. So this provisional trust actually transforms into direct knowing. And I'll use the word wisdom. It translates into, it transforms into wisdom. Faith transforms into wisdom. So there's also the sense of trusting oneself. So this question that I asked, the second question, is it possible for me to be completely free of stress and anxiety at all times and under all conditions? Even now when I sit with that question, there's a part of me that says, heck yeah. There's a part of me that's like, I don't know about that. It doesn't go down so well. It doesn't sit so well with me, that question. Faith. So where does, what's the role, how is faith, how is it a part of the path? Like, where does this show up in the Pali Canon? Why have I chosen to really bring this topic to the fore? So it turns out that faith, this provisional trust that strengthens, it's absolutely central. It's essential to making progress in the Buddhist path. And I'd just like to name some places doctrinally where faith shows up. So it shows up in its opposite as doubt. So faith and doubt, those are opposites. So doubt, this word, it's really doubt and indecision. So a very good image of doubt is, imagine arriving at a crossroads. You can either go right, left, forward, or you can turn around. And you're just not sure what to do. So you just stay there in a state of indecision, not knowing what to do. This is the experience of doubt. So doubt, it shows up as one of the five hindrances. And the five hindrances are described as hindrances to entering into a state of calm abiding, or dhyana. So it's a hindrance to meditation, five hindrances. And doubt also shows up as one of what are called the first three fetters. Yeah. So what these first three fetters are, in the Buddhist tradition, the Buddha speaks about four successive levels of insight that culminate in the complete ending of stress and anxiety. And each one of these four successive stages of insight are marked by the breaking of certain fetters. And the first three fetters, when those are broken, one is said to become a stream entrant. And just for the sake of comprehensiveness, you have stream entry as the first level of wisdom. Then there is the once returner as the second level of wisdom. Then there is the non-returner, which is the third level of wisdom. Then there is the arahant, which is the fourth level of wisdom. And this fourth level of wisdom, it corresponds to full enlightenment, the arahant. But I'd really like to speak only about the first level of wisdom, this notion of stream entry. When one enters the stream, one breaks the first three fetters. And one of those three fetters is the fetter of doubt. So this can be doubting that it's possible for me to do this. It can be doubt internally. We can also doubt that other people have done this as well. So I've heard people say, well, I don't know if enlightenment's possible. I don't know anyone who's enlightened. I don't know. It's just doubt. This binds us to suffering. Yeah. Now, faith, as it strengthens, as it grows, it can actually reach a point where faith becomes unshakable. Faith becomes unshakable. And this point is actually marked by stream entry. Okay, let me say a little bit about this, about the nature of insight, the nature of stream entry. Here's the image. Imagine I were holding a wine glass in my hand, empty wine glass, and I smash it on the ground. Bam! Breaks into 1,000 pieces. Well, there's no going back. I can't put that wine glass back together. It has been shattered. There's no going back. Insight is like that. When true insight arises, there's no going back. So when stream entry arises, there's no going back to the way you used to relate to your experience. There's simply no going back. So at this point, faith, it actually becomes a spiritual power. So faith also shows up on these two lists. There's one list called the five spiritual faculties, of which faith is one of those faculties. There's a second list called the five spiritual powers. Faith also appears on this list as a spiritual power. As a matter of fact, all five things on this list of spiritual faculties, it's the same five things that are listed as the five spiritual powers. So I think this is a really interesting teaching. At what point does faith stop being a faculty? Like, what does that mean, faith is a faculty, and what does that mean is faith as a spiritual power? Well, what I'm describing here is faith as a spiritual faculty. It is the ability to wisely discern whom to place provisional trust in, and then to investigate what they're saying within our own internal experience, and to see if what they're saying is actually true for ourselves. Can we actually experience this? We do this over and over again, and we can develop deeper and deeper trust with ourselves. And this point of stream entry, this shattering of the glass, this rising of insight, faith becomes unshakable, and faith transitions from a spiritual faculty to a spiritual power. So it's also said that with stream entry, when this happens, that your progress to full-blown enlightenment is guaranteed. Doctrinally, it says it may take up to 7 lifetimes. Maybe a while. But it is guaranteed. Yeah? So there is also this image of the momentum of practice. And I prefer the language of the gravitational pull of practice. Really, it's the gravitational pull towards full-blown liberation. So we become captured by that gravitational pull, and we are just simply drawn onwards, drawn forwards. Our progress is guaranteed, and there is no going back. Okay, so I'd like to end with a little practice that has become quite central to my own personal practice. And there is a very strong aspect of faith in this practice. So I mentioned earlier that I continue to study Pali, and also chanting in Pali has become a very important part of my practice. And chanting, so I'm going to chant for us to close this session. And there's something really beautiful I find about chanting in Pali. So imaginatively, this is just in my imagination. If we think about how people practiced 2,600 years ago in India, this was an oral tradition. And if you wanted to learn the teachings, you had to memorize them. And a very common way to memorize these teachings was to chant them with other people. So Buddhist monastics would gather and they would just chant. They'd just repeat these teachings over and over and over again. And there are many Buddhist traditions today that continue this practice of just chanting. This chanting, I can imagine that these words have been passed down from generation to generation for 2,600 years. It is this stream of practice, this wisdom that we're receiving from the distant past. And then we can absorb them today. We can receive them, and I can share them with you, and we can all participate in keeping these teachings alive. So we can actually imagine that these words are coming straight from the Buddha. They've been handed down to us, and we can receive, absorb them. And if they touch our hearts deeply, perhaps we can have the opportunity to pass them on to those who come after us. So I'd like to chant this chant. It's called the Dhammapalangatha, which translates as verses that protect the truth. Dhammapalangatha. Sabapa pasa akaranam kusala saupa sampada sachita pariyodapanam etang buddhana sasanam Dhammam chare su charitam natam du charitam chare Dhammacari sukhang seti. Asmin loke paranghicha. Natavata dhammadaro. Yavata bahuba sati. Yo chapang pi sudvana. Dhammang kayena passati. Save dhammadaro hoti. Yo dhammang napamacchati. Nati me sarananyang. Buddho me saranang varang. Etena satcha vachena. Hotu me jaya mangalang. Nati me sarananyang. Dhammo me saranang varang. Etena satcha vachena. Hotu me jaya mangalam. Nati me saranang anyang. Sangho me saranang varang. Etena satcha vachena. Hotu me jaya mangalam. Namo Buddhaya. Namo Dhammaya. Namo Sanghaya. Sadhu. 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 Thank you all for your kind attention.
Okay, thank you so much. This time we just ask for any announcements.
Hello, I'm your host today, and this is our host announcement. Please stay and enjoy the company of the Sangha. There are refreshments and hot water for tea. If you use a cup, you can just put it in the dishwasher or the sink if the dishwasher's got all clean dishes. I'll be going around with the Dhamma bowl to accept contributions to cover our expenses. Your generosity is appreciated. Donations in the range of $10 to $20 help the Sangha meet its expenses. These include honorarium for our Dharma speakers, rent for this beautiful center, and hopefully in the future, monthly dinners for the Norton Street Youth Services. Our quarterly newsletter mailed mostly to people in prison. There's a newcomer sign-up sheet on the credenza if you wish to be included and receive our Sangha membership directory. Please sign up and include the contact information you wish to share with the group. Some members go out for lunch after the meeting. Everyone is welcome to join them. The group meets at the front door around 12:30.
Thanks, Stefan. Any other announcements? Cass?
We could use some people to help with putting setting up for Zoom broadcasts and to facilitate. Actually, with vacations coming up, we're going to be shorthanded. So in order to be able to keep broadcasting our meetings on Zoom, we need some people to actually help out to do that. It's not very difficult. So speak to me afterwards, or you can send contact me through the email, info@gatebuddhist.org.
Thank you. All right, any other announcements? Okay, do you have a dedication of merit, or would you like us to use our...
Oh, please use yours.
Okay, all right. So we'll gather a circle. Ask, do you want to do it?
By the power and truth of this practice, may all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all be free from sorrow and the causes of sorrow. May all never be separated from the sacred happiness, which is without sorrow. And may all live in equanimity without too much attachment or too much aversion, believing in the equality of all that lives.
Play ball.
Thank you for listening to the Gay Buddhist Forum. If you would like to hear several new talks per month and be notified of upcoming speakers so you can participate live, please subscribe to this podcast, like us on Facebook, and join our mailing list by visiting gaybuddhist.org.